listening to Live 95 WRJM LP Coleman. Good afternoon, Coleman. It's 4 o'clock, or 4:04, actually. And it's a Tuesday, and it's been storming all day, so we're going to storm right on into Sports Talk Live here. This program is brought to you each and every week on Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. by our friends at People's Bank. They bring you Where's the Moolah each and every week. And here are your hosts for Sports Talk Live. It's Jason Spiegel and Ronnie Barnes.
Thanks, Jay, and welcome everyone to the Tuesday edition of Sports Talk Live. And Ronnie, a lot to talk about today.
A lot going on in the all across the country, and a whole lot going on in the state of Alabama. And I know we'll get into it later, but yeah, down the road in Tuscaloosa, I know you're chomping at the bit. Yeah,
chomping on that one. We might get into it a little bit.
I know you got that Auburn hat on, and I know what's coming later on.
I wouldn't do anything like that.
No, you wouldn't. Nor would I.
No, unless people have been living in a cave, they realize half the Alabama football team has been arrested. So maybe not half, three.
Oh, three. That's three too many.
Yeah, and Jonathan Taylor being the number one name, the talked about name, you know, any other day, Geno Smith would be a big story, his second DUI.
Nobody just blows that off.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, the name.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about a lot today.
Absolutely. Maybe we can get Jay later on when we get into it to pull up Saban's press conference from yesterday, and we can listen to about 7 or 8 minutes of it. And if you haven't heard it, you can make your own determination of the press conference, how you think Saban handled it. You know, everybody's got their own opinions, not only about the press conference, but about the whole situation of, you know, Jonathan Evans being, you know, wearing crimson and white to start with. So, we got plenty of time to talk about that.
And also in Tuscaloosa, no news as far as a basketball coach.
Nothing, is it? I mean, it's just quiet. Yeah. You know, we were talking just a minute ago. You know, I don't know whether that means anything or not. But for me, the longer that it rocks on and they don't hear anything, you know, from Greg Marshall, to me, it's the less chance that he will be in Tuscaloosa, you know, next season. So I don't know. My question would be, where do you go from here if he doesn't come? Where do you go? I don't have the answer.
The reason I haven't heard anything is because the Texas job, he has made it known that he is interested in the Texas job, and Texas flirting with Shaka Smart, but
seemed to be more interested in him than they did Marshall.
Nothing has happened there, so wait and see what Texas does before he makes his mind up. Alabama said to have what.
I'd heard
3 hours yesterday.
Yeah, Bill Battle met with him for about 8 hours yesterday. You know, flew to Wichita, Kansas, and met with him for 8 hours. And so I heard, and you know, you read it, you don't know whether it's true or not, but threw the offer out there at $3.5 million. I don't know whether that's legit or not, but that was the offer that was thrown out there. So I don't know if
we can reason.
He's probably lowballing him right there.
Right. Because I think if he had taken that offer, he would be in Tuscaloosa today.
That's right.
Getting ready for a press conference.
That's exactly right. So, you know, I guess he's got to, you know, mull it over, you know, in his own mind, his own heart, and within the walls of his family, and, you know, seeing what his wife thinks about it, because you know, we all know, you know, the wife's going to play a huge role in whether they pack up and move, or they're going to play a huge role in any coach changing jobs.
Oh, yeah, know? No doubt about
so,
it.
So, you know,
the mom ain't happy.
Right, and that $3.5 million wouldn't be worth a nickel, you know, if she is unhappy in Tuscaloosa. Right. So, but again, you know, that's apparently what's been thrown out there, $3.5 million. You know, I'd heard for 6 years. I don't know if there's any truth in that whatsoever, but, you know, we just have to wait and see. But I just think the further, the more days that it rocks alone, the less chance they're gonna have of getting him. And my question, and of course we can talk about it more later too, but my question is, if you don't get Marshall, where are you going? You know, what's plan B? I don't know. I mean, I'm not in the
plan B.
No, I haven't either, and I'm certainly not. You know, I'm not in the know. I'm not in the, you know, in there where the, you know, the powers of be meet and decisions that's made or anything like that. that I'm just curious as to if Marshall turns them down, you know, who they may have their, you know, eyes on. I have no idea.
Coming up at 4:30, we'll have Brian Lacey in with us and talk a little Final Four. The Final Four is set, and a good Final Four. I don't know. I think everybody's going to be at least the network will be pulling for a Duke-Kentucky showdown.
Oh, well, sure.
The championship. But
that's right.
Two teams in there, Wisconsin and Michigan State, going to have a lot to say about
it. Yeah, I don't think they're just going to roll over and, you know, hand it over to them.
And interesting enough, both games are a five-point spread right now.
They are.
Duke is a five-point favorite,
yeah,
and Kentucky a five-point favorite.
I got you. So. While we're just touching on that, and again, Brian Lacey's going to join us around 4:30 after the 4:30 break, and we'll break down those two games a little bit more. But Jason, when you mentioned that, I haven't looked at it in a long while, but you know, our Sports Talk Live bracket that we have, I know we both have to be.
I looked at it since.
You haven't looked at it since. Huh?
There is way more above us than there is below us.
Well, I can't help you. I mean, my bracket, you know, my bracket ended up with Kansas winning the national championship. That's not who I think will win it. It was just a selection and error, probably on my part, of calling out the wrong name, because I picked, and Jason will verify this, I picked Kentucky to go undefeated and win the national championship since the fall. I'm sorry, since basketball season started. I've always felt that they would. So, Jason, you know, again, my bracket says Kansas is going to be the winner, so I cannot help you. But there's going to be a lot of people in front of us that, you know.
Right. And
we're going to have to owe.
Sadly enough, Ronnie, we never even made it that far into it where Kansas would make a difference. We fell behind quickly and stayed behind.
Yes. So. Do you have that pulled up?
Yeah, I'm looking for it right now, and okay. I know the top two, but I will wait and make sure something didn't change.
Yeah, I got you.
Our top two is right in the tops in the nation. We have the perfect bracket, Vimont 20. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, that's Wesley.
All right, he is number one now at 98.6%.
Yeah.
He just got docked on his second, 97.8%.
Yeah.
And then it drops off, still not bad.
We'd love to be where it dropped off.
Yeah, at 93.6, Glad Grant's gone is in third place at 93.6, and I do know who that is.
Okay. A lot of people in front of both of us.
Let's go on down, and I see that there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 names below you, Ronnie.
Six below me?
Yeah, so.
And there won't be that many after
get this,
it's over.
I have fell into a tie for last.
As bad as mine is, yours is worse.
Yeah, I was looking up here because I had been as high as two there at one time, and boy, this weekend done
well,
again.
You plummeted, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm at 700 points now.
Well,
to give you an idea
you?
How bad off this is, the Wesley at number one has 980 points.
Yeah.
Our second place has 960.
Okay.
So I'm 280 points off the leader.
Oh, and I think I don't remember who Wesley has. I think he has certainly probably Kentucky winning it, but I don't know who he's got in the, you know, in the finals with them either.
And Villanova killed me. Villanova going out was a killer.
Oh, okay.
And
see, I had Villanova. I only have Villanova winning one game, but I had Virginia in the Final Four, and the way it ended up, I had Kansas in the Final Four too. So, but you know, we'll.
Can we just look at my Notre Dame pick on this and then forget about
everything
else?
Forget about everything else? Well, we might need to.
Boy, I'm telling you, we're going to have to take a loan.
That's what I was going to say. We got some work to do here. Yeah. I'm going to get out and start picking up aluminum cans.
The thing about it, we never said what the prizes were.
No, we didn't say what they were.
So maybe a small prize would be something worth $1 and a large prize,
$2. $2. Yeah. You know, sweet tea at McDonald's is $1. Now you can keep that in mind.
Yeah, and maybe we can get a coupon.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man. Hey, Jason, why don't I go over, with it being spring break, this week is spring break for the
the county schools, and it's also spring break with Cullman City schools. So I'll go over what's on tap for sports around Cullman County today. Not a whole lot going on here. We've got the Hoover Classic, and Cullman is playing against Thompson, and then Oak Mountain. So again, that's the Hoover Classic down in Birmingham. Cullman versus Thompson, and then Oak Mountain. We got Fairview at Hayden. That's a doubleheader. And then we have Holly Pond at Hansville. So that is all of the local sports that we have going on today. I guess with spring break, you know, must not be too awful many games scheduled, or doesn't seem to be any softball today. So, you know, maybe just some of them are kind of taking a break.
Yeah, a lot of people at the beach, I guess, this week.
That's right. Well, talking about the beach, we could really talk about what's been going on down there in Panama City this past week.
So
it's been horrible. You know, yeah. I don't know the answer to that, but the city of Panama City Beach, Florida, is going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, Panama City don't have the best name.
No.
Anyway, when you think of a place you want to send your kid, and then this is not gonna help their cause.
Absolutely, you know. And I think we didn't have 7 kids shot the last few days.
I'm not sure the number.
I think that's right. I think there's still 2 or 3 of them in the hospital, 1 critical. You know.
And what is the reasoning behind that? I've never heard to cause the shooting.
I have no idea. I don't have a clue, other than, you know, you got a bunch of kids at a party, and they're going to be drunk and high or whatever else, and, you know, what happens, and somebody pulls a gun, just starts firing them off. So, terrible situation. Another reason, another example of why my boys have never gone to spring break. Never really
had. Panama City has, and they have tried somewhat to get away from it over the past few years, but it's a reputation they built over years that you're not going to get away from overnight.
No.
It is the party place for college kids, high school seniors, so forth. It is the party place.
It is, and it gets more, you know, it's been getting more and more out of hand. Now we're to the point where, you know, kids are getting shot. I know at one time, I heard last night that I think the city council down there, something that somebody proposed that they ban all alcohol on the beach, and there wasn't a majority of the city council people who voted to do that, even with the recommendation of the sheriff.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Not a bad, you know, just a bad situation.
Yeah,
not a quick fix. But anyway, that's beside the point. But that's the local sports that's going on today. Seems like it's just baseball, no golf, no soccer, and no softball.
All right.
So
not a lot to do. So you can mow yards or something.
Yeah.
I guess
that won't be long, will it?
Boy, I'm telling you, mine needs it now.
Golf is coming very soon. I have a family member who's very avid. As a matter of fact, if anyone in Coleman has Masters tickets they'd like to give away, my dad would really.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? That's this weekend as well. You got it.
I said Masters and give away.
Yeah. Good luck getting that phone call.
Those words don't go together.
No. I'd love to go over. Well, I'd love to, you know, just go to a practice round, but it's almost impossible to get over there.
I will enjoy the TV.
I know. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Right. Just
absolutely gorgeous.
I'll watch it on TV and do like some say about football games.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm going to do that with Auburn football this year.
Sweet.
Decided not to buy season tickets.
No. Are you serious?
I'm going to.
How many years
buy the games that I want to go see, and
man, that we've only bought season. Really got you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. We've only bought season tickets the last couple of years.
Oh, okay. I thought you'd been doing it a long time.
Go to the games that we want to go to, buy those, and I figured we'd come out cheaper. And by the time you buy season tickets, give the donation to the university, pay for your parking all year, and I'll just go to a few games that I want to go to and watch the rest of them on the big screen.
3 or 4 that you want to go to,
yeah. A lot of it became like a job last year. You know, when Auburn the year before, when they won the games right at the end, went to the national championship game, it was kind of an adventure.
Yeah,
this past year it was more like a job.
I know. Got a pack over. You know, it's like moving for a day, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
you know,
you come back
you
home the next day and you got to unload everything. And when you're watching on TV, you're at home when
that's
the game's
right.
over. And I keep flashing back to that 2.5 hours I sit in traffic between Auburn and Montgomery. So
that kind of loses its appeal, doesn't it?
Ronnie, speaking of the Final Four, I'll throw these out all during the show. I'm not going to get hung up on this or anything, but just throw out a few facts about the Final Four and this year's Final Four. Who do you think the highest scoring team in the field was?
Of the Final
That'll
Four?
That'll be a surprise.
The highest scoring
team? Yeah, not the Final
team.
Four, but the entire tournament. It's going to be a surprise.
It will be, and I'm going to say it was Georgia State.
BYU. 83.6.
I remember that now.
The lowest scoring team in the field, Wyoming, at 61.7.
That's probably more than Alabama average.
Who do you think the slowest team?
Slowest?
The slowest team.
What do you mean by that?
By the number of possessions per game.
Oh, that's in the tournament?
That is in the tournament.
Oh, I'm going to go out on a limb. Well, let me ask you this. Is it anybody that's in the Final Four?
No.
Okay.
Think good defense. That is the clue for the day. Good defense.
Virginia,
the slowest team, only averaging 58.2 possessions per game.
Yeah. Yep.
So one or two more, and then we'll go to a break. The best free throw shooting team in the tournament. This is an SEC team.
An SEC team? Ole Miss,
right. 77.8%.
They needed to shoot a few more than that.
They didn't hit enough of them. The last one, and I'm just going to read this one out because you won't ever guess this one.
Oh, well.
The worst three-point shooting team
Alabama
in the tournament. Hampton.
Hampton.
30.4%.
The old Hampton, whatever they are.
Hampton, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, 4:21, time for a break. We'll be right back. Sports Talk Live again at 4:30. Brian Lacey will join us to talk Final Four basketball. You're listening to Sports Talk Live, 95.5 Coleman.
ARN News Center, I'm Angie Norvell. Jefferson County authorities released the identity of a child killed when he was struck by a car on the southwest side of Birmingham. Malik Carpenter, 3 years old, driver of the vehicle, contacting police within minutes of the accident, and therefore it's no longer being investigated as a hit and run. Birmingham News says the child was struck when he walked from behind a parked car to cross the street to return home. Dothan police digging on the city's far west side after getting a tip a body may be buried there. It was the same spot where more than a year ago, 25-year-old Riles Chapman went missing. Crews found nothing in their search. A school principal from Muscle Shoals hospitalized following a weekend boating accident. Webster Elementary School principal Jason Simmons listed in critical condition in the ICU at Huntsville Hospital. Authorities say Simmons and his wife Anna were thrown from their fishing boat Sunday evening as they were traveling on Wilson Lake back to her parents' house on Alabama shores. Anna Simmons receiving minor injuries. I'm Angie Norvell. This is the Alabama Radio Network. A former volunteer soccer coach at Gunnersville High School is facing a new batch of criminal charges. Marshall County authorities say a grand jury's indicted David Barrow on more than 24 child porn counts. Investigators allege Barrow placed cameras under an athletic facility table and in a bathroom stall. A man and woman arrested for scamming the elderly. The man and woman allegedly telling elderly homeowners they do work on their homes, but then would go inside and steal purses, jewelry, and more. An alert truck driver spotting the two acting suspiciously when he caught dumping a purse in a dumpster, got the license tag and contacted authorities, police arresting Robbie Stanley and Jade Lovell. And 90% of the stolen property has been recovered. And Rebecca Boyd of Jefferson County says her trip to the movies with her kids was going to be the last one for a while as her husband had been laid off. Two girls misbehaved during the showing of Cinderella. Boyd speaking up to the girls, their mother found out, having the teens apologize and pay for Boyd to go to the movies again. National attention to the story has prompted a job offer for Boyd's husband. I'm Angie Norvell. This is ARN. County News, Charter Communications buying Bright House Networks for $10.4 billion. Bright House services customers in Alabama, Florida, Indiana, Michigan, and California. Deal still has to be approved by shareholders. Litter patrols are in high demand throughout Birmingham. City councilors waging war against illegal dumping, asking residents to take new pride in their neighborhoods by reporting offenders. Officials say some people are dumping dangerous chemicals and shards of glass on the side of the road. Now that spring's arrived, the Tennessee Valley Authority will be opening 5 visitor centers Saturday, including Wilson Dam and Muscle Shoals. The facilities offer information about TVA history, how it operates, and how it manages the Tennessee River and its tributaries. TVA is the nation's largest public utility, serving 9 million people in parts of Alabama and several other states. Gas prices remaining virtually unchanged in Alabama. Average price for a gallon of regular gas at $2.16. It's about a half cent higher than 1 week ago. I'm Angie Norfell. This is the Alabama Radio Network.
Hey, Coleman. Live 95 turns 1 year old on April 7th. And to celebrate, we are announcing the first annual Live 95 Battle of the Bands. If you're in a band or know someone who is, send them over to live95coleman.com for all the details. Tentative date is Saturday, May 2nd, and the whole thing will be broadcast live right here on Live 95. We invite any local band to participate, and we don't care if you're a solo acoustic performer or one of Coleman's best-known bands. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com or send us a message on our Facebook page to get booked. There is limited availability, so set times will be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. Live 95 will be taking donations at the event, and you can vote for any of the bands performing by donating to their tip jar. If you can't make the show, no problem. Donate online using PayPal from the Live 95 website and make your vote count. We'll offer each band a chance to get local airtime on Live 95 just for participating. And we'll be recording the whole thing back at the studio to re-air live cuts from the event during Live 95's regular playlist rotation. Get signed up today. Deadline to get on the set list is Friday, April 17th at 5 p.m. The set list and schedule will then be announced on Live 95 and made available on our website. Happy birthday to us. And here's to another year of providing Coleman with a unique blend of music. Come and meet us Saturday, May 2nd, so mark your calendars. More details coming soon from Coleman's Independent Radio, Live 95.
Back with you, 426, and Ronnie, if people hear a scream, they'll know the lightning got us.
Absolutely. Popping and cracking out here, a little thunder going on. And
this is about my 20th text message today telling me severe thunderstorm warning.
So oh, well.
It's one of those days. Welcome to spring, everybody.
That's exactly right. You got to take the good with the bad, and I'm ready for some warm weather. So, you know, God forbid we have any tornadoes and that kind of stuff, but I am ready for some warm weather.
We are on a tornado year. We are due for tornadoes this year, and whether we'll have them or not, I don't know, but
that's the way to encourage everybody, Jason.
Well, if you run the tornado rotation, we'll say, it is a year that we should be due tornadoes.
That's
now,
right. That's
may
right.
not work out, but just find you a low spot and get in it. Stay there till about June.
And just start praying. Hey, well, did you see about the pro day down at Florida State?
Yeah, and actually we watched some of that.
Did you? Okay. So, apparently Jameis looked pretty good.
He
must have. Just a quote here by Jameis Winston. It says, When asked by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when asked why the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should make him the number one overall draft pick in the draft, Jameis Winston didn't hesitate, because I'm the best player in the draft.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's confidence, baby.
He threw some passes that they said was usually left off of the pro day, and that he went a harder scheme than what most go. And they asked Jameis about that, and he said he wanted to show everybody that he was the number one player in the nation.
Is that right? Maybe he.
Yeah, no holes barred when it comes to Jameis.
Maybe.
Speaking of Jameis, Ronnie, I got a text from a good friend of ours, Florida State fan, Jeffrey Sullins.
Yes.
And I wish we had video, because I'd like to put this up on video. It is a picture of Nick Saban in a Alabama shirt with the sleeves cut out. And it says, "I like my violence like I like my beer, domestic."
Oh, that's That's low. But hey, there's going to be more of that.
Oh yeah, that is just the start.
But you know what? So. You know, if you're going to play with that fire like that, you get burned. You just got to deal with the pain.
And Ronnie, for the first time, I think I've seen Alabama fans that I've never seen say anything negative. Speaking of Eddie Gwynn, when I say this, he's going to call later on, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
But Alabama fans that I've never seen say anything negative about Alabama get negative on this story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, Jason, and later on, hopefully we get Jay later on in the show to play, play the press conference from yesterday or a portion of it. Where Saban is trying to explain, and we'll talk more about it later, about, you know, signing the Taylor kid who had been kicked off at Georgia. But, you know, it's the type of issue that we're talking about here. Yeah, if you're being kicked off for Georgia for two or three drug-related, you know, marijuana or that kind of stuff, and he came to Alabama and had it happen again, it wouldn't be that big a deal. Same thing with, and I'm not trying to compare, you know, the story that kept coming up when Kim was at Auburn, you know, about the laptops and all that kind of stuff, you know, that's all minor. I mean, in comparison to domestic violence, and that's on the forefront now in sports simply because, and it should be, I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but, you know, because of the Ray Rice situation and because of, you know, Adrian Peterson, you know, the way he disciplined his child, it's out there. It's the number one topic that comes up in terms of having lasting consequences for players and their behavior. You know, when we all blow it off that, hey, the kid got arrested, you know, had possession of marijuana. You know, we all say, well, you know, that's bad. Kid don't need to be doing that. Needs to, you know, make better choices. But when, you know, a player has been arrested multiple times for domestic violence of beating up a man who's 6'5", 330 pounds, beating up a girl. That's not something you just say, well, you know, he needs to change what he's doing, which he does. I mean, for most people, it's like that guy needs to go to jail,
right?
At least for a period of time.
The first charge, you know, he was charged with choking and punching his girlfriend.
Yeah.
The girl in Tuscaloosa had marks on her neck.
Yeah.
And so,
and he punched a hole in a wall or a door. Or
so
something.
You can pretty much say basically same thing that happened the first time. Ronnie and I discussed before the show, and if anybody has an opinion, if any attorneys are listening, and we might try to get someone on.
Yeah.
I know I'm thinking of someone we might can call.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the university or could the University of Alabama be liable in this situation? Should a suit
or
be
any,
brought?
Or any university in any similar situation?
For bringing this dude on campus, knowing the troubled past he had,
right? For domestic violence, where somebody's, you know, is getting,
if this is your daughter,
injury,
and you're expecting the University of Alabama to provide her with a safe environment. Now, I have no idea where she was at, what was going on, but the fact is, the University of Alabama, by giving him a scholarship, brought him on campus. This would not have happened if it had not been for the University of Alabama,
right,
providing him with a scholarship.
Right.
So, did they play a part in this, and now are they liable?
I don't know, but we will find out. I mean,
I think, you know, odds are good that they are.
I think there's certainly a possibility there. I mean, you know, like we said earlier, Jason, anybody can sue anybody for anything, and it might not be something that they can win, you know, get money out of the university, but it can cause you a headache. And why do you? And you don't need that headache.
Right.
You don't have to have that. And I know we'll talk more about it later. It was just a bad situation. I understand trying to help people. I understand trying to help kids. I understand trying to give kids second chances. I'm for that. You're for that. We've all been given second chances. However, should we not have maybe some parameters on what we're going to allow a second chance to be?
Right, and we know, Lonnie, we've talked about it, made jokes about it. We know the second chance stuff when it comes to this guy is a load of crap. Nick Saban signed him because, just as you said, he's 6'5" or whatever, 335 pounds.
And so, they recruited him heavy out of high school, and Georgia got him.
And if, as we've said, if he's 5'9", 175 pounds,
that's right,
place kicker, he don't get that chance.
No, he doesn't get an opportunity. He gets no chance whatsoever. And yes, if he had gone there and done well and everything he was supposed to do, you know, everything would have been fine. But the bottom line is, we're bringing him in not to try to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not to try to rehabilitate him. We're bringing him in here to help us win football
games. That's right. That's
and if we can help him get on the right path while he's here, that's gravy. That's a bonus. But he's coming here to play football.
Right.
And everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah. If they are so concerned about giving second chances and third chances or whatever, yeah. Saban even alluded in his press conference
sure.
to third chances.
Yeah.
So why don't they set this kid up with counseling, get him some professional help, and then try to get him a diploma
yeah.
instead of having him on the football team.
Yeah.
They're not that concerned about it.
No.
If he's not helping him on the football team, they can no. care less what happens this
That's point. Right. The number one purpose for him being on campus, or anybody who recruits any kid, you know, if you're just right. recruiting, you want that kid on that campus to help you win football games.
That's it. That's it. That's the and reason that's they the make millions is. Of dollars, and that's why
that's
they continue
right.
to make millions of
that's
dollars.
That's right.
And hey guys, let me hop in here for just a second
yeah.
and give everybody a weather update.
Yeah,
looks like the heaviest shower activity is in the south end of the county, like down around Hansville, and then there's also some shower activity back towards Jasper that seems to be moving east as well. Some of it is right on severe limits. Of course, nothing, you know, real severe like tornadic or anything, but the heaviest rainfall is in those areas. The north end of the county is looking pretty good right. The thunder that we're hearing here is all south of here.
All right, good deal.
FYI.
Jay Bryan is coming in as we speak. Could you take us to a quick break and let us get
yep.
him set up?
All right.
We'll be right back with Brian Lacy. You're listening to Sports Talk Live 95.5 Coleman, Tuesday afternoon.
Tommy Warhurst with Farmers Insurance. When was the last time you sat down with your agent for a review of your coverages? It's probably been a while. But your insurance is about you and protecting your family. And you should be a part of selecting the coverage that's best for you and get it at a price that fits your budget. My focus is you and doing what's right for you and your family, all while helping you save money. If you'd like a free insurance review, my number is 256-338-3701, and the website is thewarhurstagency.com.
We are farmers. Bum, ba, da, bum, 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 bum.
Hey, Coleman. Live 95 turns 1 year old on April 7th. And to celebrate, we are announcing the first annual Live 95 Battle of the Bands. If you're in a band or know someone who is, send them over to live95coleman.com for all the details. Tentative date is Saturday, May 2nd, and the whole thing will be broadcast live right here on Live 95. We invite any local band to participate, and we don't care if you're a solo acoustic performer or one of Coleman's best-known bands. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com or send us a message on our Facebook page to get booked. There is limited availability, so set times will be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. Live 95 will be taking donations at the event, and you can vote for any of the bands performing by donating to their tip jar. If you can't make the show, no problem. Donate online using PayPal from the Live 95 website and make your vote count. We'll offer each band a chance to get local airtime on Live 95 just for participating. And we'll be recording the whole thing back at the studio to re-air live cuts from the event during Live 95's regular playlist rotation. Get signed up today. Deadline to get on the set list is Friday, April 17th at 5 p.m. The set list and schedule will then be announced on Live 95 and made available on our website. Happy birthday to us. And here's to another year of providing Coleman with a unique blend of music. Come and meet us Saturday, May 2nd, so mark your calendars. More details coming soon from Coleman's independent radio, Live 95.
Bye. Back with you, 438, and the Mod Squad is together.
That's
now.
Right.
Ronnie and Brian are both sitting in here with me, so it's going to get dangerous, but let's get off of Alabama football and get to Brian's topic of the day, and that is basketball. Brian, the Final Four is set. First, I guess, just give us your thoughts on the Final Four overall.
I think if you look at the fact that three of the four number one seeds made it, that, you know, I think that shows the committee did a pretty good job. I would say in hindsight, I didn't know a whole lot about Villanova. And
I didn't either.
Apparently I didn't either.
And so...
apparently the committee didn't either.
That was the one miss, I would say.
Yeah.
Probably in hindsight, if you look at it, I think Arizona probably should have been that fourth number one seed. And I feel pretty safe saying that if that had been the case, we probably would have all four number one seeds.
That's right.
Would have made it... to Indianapolis this weekend.
Trivia question, when has four number one seeds made it to the final? How does that happen?
It has, I want to say, I heard one of the guys say it, maybe Jay Billis the other day, 2009 maybe, okay. 2008. It's
been
happened
a while,
recently,
but, yeah.
But it doesn't happen very often that all four make it.
Absolutely. You know, there you got Michigan State, who's a seven seed, but, you know, Michigan State's not a seven seed. I mean, they've gotten hot and started playing well at the right time.
They have.
Izzo, you know, you can't count Izzo out.
Anytime it gets to March, he gets his teams playing well.
Absolutely.
I saw a list today. I guess, you know, if you combined, you take the four teams that are in the Final Four.
Right.
They've only got about 10 losses combined.
Exactly. I can tell you one team doesn't have any of them.
And if you look down that list, though, it's, you know, it's pretty impressive. It's some of the losses are to each other. I mean,
that's
you know,
right.
Michigan State has lost to Wisconsin.
Right.
I think they've lost to Duke. Duke beat Wisconsin also. So, you know, there's some Kansas. There's Illinois. The one team that jumps out on that list, though, is Texas Southern. And anybody that's grown up here in the South, we know about SWAC schools and SWAC athletics.
That's
and I'm
right.
telling you, it's a no-no. I mean, I don't care what level of college you're at. You just don't lose to SWAC schools. I mean, that is an unwritten rule. You don't do it. And, I mean, it's grounds to put you immediately on the hot seat. And Michigan State lost at home to Texas Southern back in September. Now, a lot of people may not know Mike Davis, former Alabama basketball player, former Indiana head coach, is the head coach there. And so,
former UAB.
That's right. And he, you know, he knows a little bit about basketball. He knows how to recruit. They have a good program at Texas Southern, but it's still – that is not a game that you are allowed to lose and still make a Final Four in the same year.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that shows a little bit, I think sometimes we don't value enough, especially with basketball, when you play that many games, how much a team can grow and develop over the course of a season. And you know, we look at their resume coming into the tournament and you see, oh, they lost to that team and that team. Okay, well, but when did that happen? If it happened 3.5 months ago, we don't need to think about that so much. We need to see what they're doing right now in the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks.
Not the same club.
And
may have had injuries. You have no, you know, you have
exactly.
No idea.
And so Michigan State, you know, as a 7 seed, they're certainly a Cinderella from that standpoint on paper, but I don't think anybody that looked at that region you know, would be surprised to say Michigan State made the Final Four.
I agree. Hey, going back to the Elite Eight real quick, Kentucky-Notre Dame, what did you think about that game? If you got to see it. I mean, I'm sure you got to see it.
I watched all that. you know, it's been interesting to hear some of the folks talk about it since then. You know, we're in this mode now. You heard a lot of it this week, especially after, you know, Wisconsin won and played so well on Saturday afternoon.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to be, you know, to call their shot now and say, oh, I think so-and-so's going to, you know, I think Wisconsin's going to be able to beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, Notre Dame had a great game plan. Mike Bray did an amazing job. He convinced his kids they were good enough to win.
That's right.
And I think some of the thing, if you've watched Kentucky throughout the year, well, you could have watched Kentucky on Thursday night. You know, a big deal was made about, you know, West Virginia had talked a lot before the game about what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But you could tell within the first 5 minutes that they didn't believe they could actually do it.
No.
And that game was over. And Notre Dame didn't have that mentality. Makes a difference, too, when you look at the fact that their core leaders on their team are upperclassmen.
Yes.
And I just thought they played a great game, and it was a case where one team played just about to the top of their capabilities. And Kentucky didn't play a great game, and that evened up the playing table. That Notre Dame at their best and Kentucky kind of just having an average night until about the final 6 or 7 minutes was almost enough for Notre Dame to pull off the upset.
Now, y'all show me some love.
Yeah.
Show me some love. Who, when we were together last time, who said they thought Notre Dame had a chance to beat Kentucky?
You did.
And it
you absolutely
happen.
Did.
I was going to have the big head if it had happened.
I thought they may really get them. You know, I mean that because they were not starstruck. They were not intimidated. No. You know, they knew what, like Brian said, they were well coached. They knew exactly what they wanted to do. You know, and if you know if a shot here or a shot there had fallen, you know they could have won the game. However, on the flip side of that. Kentucky still moves on, and they didn't play great by any means.
No,
they played. You know,
I didn't realize.
Good, you know,
and to give Kentucky credit, I didn't realize this until somebody said it after the game that Kentucky scored on each of its final 9 possessions.
I did not know that. And 1 by 2.
And 1 by 2. So they had to have every single one of those. You know, one of the Harrison kids hit a big 3, a long 3.
Yeah.
And then I thought a crucial stretch right about the 3-minute mark. Notre Dame had hit a 3 to go up 6, I think. And Calipari called it, kind of looked to his bench and was a little panicked. And they called a timeout. And they came out of that, and their little point guard, Tyler Euless, the freshman, hit a 3 in the corner that coming out of the timeout.
Huge. Changed the momentum.
Gets it right back to that one possession game.
In its own.
And I think after Notre Dame hit that 3 that had put them up 6, I think all they scored the rest of the game was 3 free throws. If you remember, they had 3 consecutive trips to the free throw line where they only made 1 out of 2.
Right.
Each time.
Right.
And was just enough for Kentucky to get out of there. I think one thing that people may have missed, if you watch the end of that game, the biggest play of the game after the Harrison kid makes both free throws to put him up 2 with 6 seconds left. He immediately found Grant, Notre Dame's point guard, senior point guard, the guy that they know Notre Dame's going to get the ball to.
Horace Grant's son.
And he immediately gets in his hip pocket. 6 seconds left, you know, that's plenty of time to go the length of the floor.
Yep.
If you can inbound the ball up to even the 3-point line or to midcourt, well, now you're talking all kinds of time.
Absolutely.
He forced Grant to come all the way to the baseline and have the ball basically handed to him. And at that point, pretty much every option that Notre Dame had was gone for him to dribble down and get the best shot he could.
That's right.
And so that full court pressure, again, we've talked about this all year. When you look at Kentucky, you know, defense is the reason they are 38-0. And yes, they've got the one and done talents. They've got a roster full of guys that are going to be in the NBA. But people have talked about all week. You know, their leading scorer is scoring 11 points a game. The fact that John Calipari can get all of these kids that are going to be millionaires within the next 24 months, most of them probably within the next 3 or 4 months. And he has convinced them to do everything a coach would ever want a team to do. They're selfless. They play defense. They don't care who gets the credit.
That's right.
It kind of runs in the face of what we think about with college basketball and this one-and-done mentality where it's, I'm just going to show up for a year, score as many points as I can get, and go get drafted into the NBA. He's getting that level of talent and getting them to play team basketball. Yeah. It's fun to
watch. Let me ask you this while we're talking about Kentucky, and I'll ask both of you. The Las Vegas odds makers, it's off the line now. You can't bet on it if you wanted to, but the last time I seen it, Kentucky was -138 to win the entire tournament. Right, that means for those listening, you would have to bet $138 to win 100. Is that a good bet, or is that? I mean, to me, I'm thinking, no way, I'm going to bet 138 to win 100.
I guess it's just a matter of how much confidence you have. I mean, if you think
that's pretty confident,
if
yeah, they are.
I'm saying if you're the one with your money in your pocket, standing there, you know, if you think it's that sure of a thing, then it's really not that big of a gamble. I mean. But that would be tough, you know. Again, when you take you hear people talk before the tournament, would you take Kentucky or any other of the 67 teams in the field? You know, college basketball is I think I would still have to say I would take Kentucky, but the one game, one night nature of the NCAA tournament, especially
it's not a series.
When you get down to really the Elite Eight, even when you get to the Sweet 16, you still might have a way outlier Cinderella
right.
that's won two games the weekend before in shocking fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Most years, if you look at the Elite Eight, you're talking teams not only that are perennially, but that particular year, you can probably take all eight of those teams, and they've been ranked inside the top 20 all year, and they're probably ranked in the top 15 going into the tournament. It's the best of the best. And you're rolling out the ball one night and saying, who's better tonight? That's really tough to win every single time. And so to take a bet like that, to say, okay, I'm going to say that Kentucky's better than every single team in college basketball on any given night, I think, if you had some of these teams, if Kentucky played a seven-game series against a lot of these teams, it would take five, six, seven games for them to win a series. Right. They wouldn't sweep everybody every single night.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's even more impressive, the fact that they have managed to go out every single night and win and not have that night.
One hiccup where they just don't get it done. And, everybody can say, well, the SEC is not as strong, blah, blah, blah. And certainly it is not one of the top conferences. It's not a Big 12. It's not we can kind of disregard the Big 12 a little bit, but it's not an ACC caliber, conference, and nobody claims that it is. But to still be able to run the table to this point is phenomenal, regardless of what kind of talent you get. And, of course, Calipari, he doesn't get great credit for being a great coach or a great X and O guy. For me, he's a great psychiatrist. He's the best psychiatrist in all of basketball. That's just what Brian was talking about, is getting these kids who are one and done to put their personal feelings or their personal selfishness aside and just play as a unit. I mean, it's remarkable what he's been able to do there. So he's the greatest psychiatrist I think there is in the game.
Saturday, Kentucky -5 playing Wisconsin. Do you take Kentucky and give up the points, or how do you play this one? We're gonna jump ahead of Greg and see how he does Thursday. But
my feeling is that I would, if you said Kentucky's a 5-point favorite, I would think they'll win by more than 5 on Saturday. I just can't imagine that Kentucky. That was kind of their wake up call Saturday, and I loved the fact too, guys. If you watched the end of the game, that they didn't just sort of walk off the court like, they celebrated like they want to see kids celebrating winning a game.
Absolutely.
Even though there's so much pressure, I mean, they were genuinely excited to have the chance to go to the Final Four. When you look at, Ronnie, as a basketball coach, if I told you these stats, looking, and didn't tell you who won the game, who lost the game, I just said, here's was this team's stats, that they shot over 50% from the 3-point range for the entire game.
I'd say they won.
But
I know you got some more.
12 of 18 from 3-point range.
Yeah.
Shot 55% from the field for the game. Only had 9 turnovers. How much would you assume, not knowing anything the other team did, how much would you assume if they made 12 out of 18 threes and shot over 50% of the game, how much would you say they won by?
I would say they would won by at least 8 to 12, something like that.
Minimum. Yeah.
Minimum.
They had to do that just to have a
chance
to win. If they shoot 50% from 3-point range, which for any level of basketball is phenomenal. If you called Bobby Meyer today and told him, listen, I'll make you a deal, Coleman will shoot 50% in every game next year. They'll never shoot over 50%, but they'll never shoot less than 50% from three. He would take it right
over
every game.
As any coach would.
If Wisconsin had shot 50% from three on Saturday, that would have been a 1-point game in the final minute. And it was still in the final 2 minutes. Arizona had possessions and a chance to win. Arizona statistics as the losing team shot 55% from the field, made 27 of 20, 28 out of 30 free throws.
And still lost.
That's how good Wisconsin had to play.
What was the final?
Final score was a 7-point game with
them
making free throws. Was a minute left. That was a one possession game.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine.
You're still going to take Kentucky
because
with 5 points.
I don't think Wisconsin can play that good again, because that's the way Wisconsin's going to have to play to have a chance to beat Kentucky, and I don't think they can do it again.
I think, and I picked, and I'm not trying to beat my own drum here. I picked Wisconsin as my one team who could possibly beat Kentucky. And it's going to take the exact same thing happening as Kentucky's going to have to play a little below their potential, and Wisconsin's going to have to play pretty close to perfect to have a chance to win the ball game. That's the only way. I love to watch Wisconsin play. I love what they do. I love the style they play. They're hard nosed. You know, they're very good. They're great. They're very good defensively, and they can shoot the basketball. You know, you got the 6'9" kid out there, that was just tearing up threes. I can't remember his name.
Sam Decker.
Decker, that's it. And then you've got the 7-footer.
Frank Kaminsky.
There you go. That, you know, probably going to be the player of the year. I think it's going to be a good ball game. I think Kentucky's going to play better. They're going to have to play better.
Who are you
going to
take on -5?
I'm going to take Wisconsin on -5.
You're taking Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And I'll do that because I picked Wisconsin as my team.
I've already got my order in on that one, and I did side with Brian on that one. I'm taking Kentucky and giving up the points, which means you're probably right, Ronnie, because I've been on a bad streak.
Yeah.
I started out the game hot. Again, I could easily see the game coming down to the final minute. It's a three-point game. You miss a shot, you foul.
Right.
Kentucky makes some free throws and ends up winning by 5, 6, 7 points right in that range.
Or you could see Kentucky winning by 15. You don't see Wisconsin winning by 15. But you can see Kentucky winning by 15. So there we have there. That's that side, you know, Kentucky, Wisconsin. Think it's going to be a great ball game.
Yeah. Like I said, we've reached the point where it's so easy to try to pick apart what Kentucky does wrong.
Yeah.
And say, oh, well, they're not good at this, and oh, they couldn't guard that, and let's...
Exactly.
Let's jump on the other side of the bracket.
Let's go to Duke and...
Michigan State. Duke is a 5-point favorite also. Both games 5 points. Duke favored by 5 playing Michigan State.
You know, we go back to talking about what Michigan State does this time of year. I guess this is Tom Izzo's 7th trip to the Final Four in 17 years as a head coach. Duke is just loaded. And again, anybody, if you follow college basketball, you have the opportunity to watch them a lot during the year. Just as a fan, I grew up a North Carolina fan, so I'm not a big Duke fan, but I still get to watch them
a lot.
Yeah. And I think Michigan State doesn't quite have enough firepower to keep up with what Duke can put out on the floor.
I don't think it'll be 5. I think it'll be more than 5.
Now, I think Duke wins by more than 5.
Yeah.
Because Tom Izzo is not the kind of guy either that's going to go to his office this week with his coaches and try to scheme up something that Duke's not expecting them to do. He's just going to go and just keep grinding and squeezing to get every last drop of just fight out of his guys.
That's
and that's what they do. They just play hard. And you know, he doesn't have on that team right now. I was talking with my brother the other night.
High school All-American.
Yeah,
McDonald's.
We were just talking, you know, in this one and done, you know, era that we're in now, and you know, it took Duke a while to come around, but Coach Krzyzewski has started recruiting those type kids.
Well, he's got 8
and
Calipari's, high school All-Americans.
Yeah, and probably 3 or 4 of those are going to go pro. So a couple others will be back. You know, Calipari brings them in every year. My brother and I had a hard time. You know, Zach Randolph, who plays now for the Memphis Grizzlies. Was I think either a 1, maybe a 2 year guy. But other than that, you know, Izzo, he gets McDonald's All Americans, but he's not getting these straight to the NBA guys.
No.
And he's getting some more kids that are 3-star recruits and look like Trice, his point guard, who's a 4th year senior, who's been a steady player for them, but you know, has not been spectacular.
Exactly.
But has hit big shots here in the last month for them. You know, they're just going to do what they do, which is play hard defense, you know, come at you with what they have. I just think Duke's going to have a little
too much talent.
Now, let me tell you what the nation is doing with their money. In the Wisconsin-Kentucky game, 64% of the money right now going to Wisconsin +5. In the Duke-Michigan State game, 52% of the money going to Michigan State. So that one pretty close, but surprising that Wisconsin getting 64% of the
people
money
think
right
it's
now.
Going to be closer than
and
the 5
like
points.
I said, I think that's an overreaction to Kentucky struggling on Saturday and Wisconsin playing maybe the single best performance of any team in any game this year.
That's right. You know, Wisconsin just – I just enjoy watching them play. You know, and Kaminsky, 7-footer, you know, he can take the ball out on the perimeter. I tell you where I think they'd – where they might have, I wouldn't say it's an advantage, if Kentucky's going to press them, you know, they just get the ball into Kaminsky. He's 7 foot tall. Of course, Kentucky's much taller than
sure.
most teams, you know, but he's a 7 footer there, and he's able to see the floor, and he's able to just throw over the top. I don't know that Kentucky will hurt them with a press at all. I just don't see that happening. Of course, my belief is you're going to have to be able, if you can defend from 20 feet in and you're solid right there, you have a great chance. If you've got to rely on being able to press to win at this level, I think you're out of luck.
Yeah, and when Willie Cauley-Stein is the difference maker for Kentucky, because you're talking about a kid that's almost 7 feet tall and can guard all five positions on the floor.
And you do it. He take a point guard. It didn't make any difference.
Yeah, and has the lateral quickness to keep up with
amazing.
A kid like that. So where Wisconsin a lot of times has an advantage, where you can take a 7 foot Frank Kaminsky, put him at the top of the key, run the offense through him, where he faces up, and if a big man won't step out and guard him, he can take that shot, or he can take them down into the post. Well, Willie Cauley-Stein can step out and guard him and take that option away from him. And then certainly they've got guys that have athleticism enough to guard someone like a Sam Decker.
Right.
I would be shocked. I mean, I would still expect, you know, Decker and Kaminsky are their two best players.
Sure.
There's a reason they're in the Final Four because they've had phenomenal seasons.
They were there last year, you know.
You know, his career high, I think, has been each of the back-to-back last two games. He scored 23 against North Carolina.
Yeah.
In the Sweet 16, which was career high, and then he scored 27 against Arizona. So, you know, he's going to have that level of performance.
Didn't those two combined against Arizona score like 56 points?
Something. I mean, it was 90% of their offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to take that kind of effort or more out of them, and then getting additional help from your other role players for them to have a chance to win. But again, I picked Wisconsin to be the one club that I thought could win, but you know, we'll see. But what about switching gears and going to Duke, Okafor, is he not impressive?
His footwork
it's magical.
His passing for a big man that's just 18 years old. you know, his ability when a double team comes to recognize where it's coming from and know where his teammates are at and how to take advantage of it. You know, a lot of times kids that are that size that have, you know, just played high school and AAU ball, they just don't have the basketball IQ yet because they haven't played enough games where everybody else on the floor is as big as
they
are.
That's right.
But you can tell he's not intimidated at all.
It's amazing.
By that.
I'll give you guys one guy that's going to be pulling hard for Michigan State, Derek Stevens, a Las Vegas resident. Put $20,000 on Michigan State back on December 5th when Michigan State was a 50-1 odds to win it all. So Michigan State wins this thing, he will win a cool $1 million.
If Michigan State wins it. Wow.
$1 million. All right. The music means it's time for a break. Rain moving in. We'll be right back. Talk a little more basketball and then on to a little bit of Alabama criminal report, I guess we'll say.
Yeah, keeping a pretty close eye on what's happening out there. It's heaviest over Good Hope right now. A little bit going on between Hansville and White City, but most of it over the south end of town. So.
All right. Stay dry. We'll be right back. Sports Talk Live, 95.5. Come.
We're the all-new Live 95, WRJM-LP, Coleman.
In the ARN News Center, I'm Angie Norvell. Four males questioned about the shooting of an off-duty Jefferson County deputy. The officer walking on a trail near Pratt Highway when she was grazed by a bullet. The group questioned, ages 19, 14, 13, and 12, told investigators they were using a .22 caliber rifle in the backyard of a home near the walking trail, firing it onto the ground. One of the bullets ricocheted and struck the deputy in the arm. Authorities say the 19-year-old could be charged with reckless endangerment. The juvenile is now in their parents' custody. The deputy expected to make a full recovery. Authorities make an arrest after human remains were found near Cedar Bluff. Cherokee County Sheriff's Office's Terry Lee McKinney is charged with murder. A Dale County man facing domestic violence and assault charges. Investigators say Nicholas Geisinger attacked a pregnant woman with a hammer, hit her in the back, knocked her down. She was treated and released from an area hospital. Baldwin County voters headed to the polls today deciding a school tax referendum, whether to add 1% sales tax for public schools. I'm Angie Norvell. This is the Alabama Radio Network.
Terrifying moments for a Birmingham resident when her home is invaded. It happened at Eagle View Apartments in the east part of the city. The victim says two men knocked on her door claiming to be with the post office. When she opened it, they forced their way in, holding her at gunpoint, taking numerous items. The woman is okay, but the suspects are still on the loose. A North Alabama obstetrician turned legislator seeking to repeal a law on postpartum medical requirements named for one of his patients who died. State Senator Larry Stutz seeking to repeal a 1999 law requiring certain blood work and for written consent before being discharged from hospitals. Rose's law, named for Rose Church, who died of a heart attack after giving birth. Her widower lobbied for the law. Stutz saying on Facebook he opposed the one-size-fits-all medical laws and medical decisions that should be made in the exam room and not at the legislature. Church's widower filing a malpractice lawsuit against Stutz that was settled. A dean from the University of Iowa chosen for a leadership position at the University of Alabama, David Grady, will begin serving as vice president for student affairs June 15th. I'm Angie Norvell. This is ARN. In sports, another Alabama football player arrested. This time, Tuscaloosa police slapped the cuffs on running back Tyron Jones. Authorities say Jones and a second man were taken into custody after officers found marijuana in their possession during a traffic stop. Jones was already indefinitely suspended for conduct not to the standard of the Alabama football program. He's the third Crimson Tide player arrested in recent days. Head coach Nick Saban addressing the press concerning the arrest of Jonathan Taylor, who was dismissed from the team. He's facing a domestic violence charge.
The guy came here with some very specific guidelines and zero tolerance, and obviously didn't live up to that. And while we've created many opportunities for players through the years, and sometimes those things have worked out extremely well, and we're sad to say in this case that, you know, it didn't.
Safety Geno Smith, who got a second DUI over the weekend, not at practice. He's going to be off the field till he takes care of his issues. Auburn Tigers back at practice today after being off for a week for spring break. Angie Norvell, ARN Sports.
Back with you, 5:05 on a stormy Tuesday evening, and just got a report down at our office that Good Hope, there is hail.
There's hail going on at Good Hope.
I'm telling you, large hail has just fell at Good Hope, so if you've got a vehicle in Good Hope, you might want to check it.
Get it out there.
I'm telling
you. Before the windows get broke out of it. Wow, the pictures you were showing there, and that was from Allen?
Yeah. That's from Allen down at our office.
It looked like they were as big as a ping pong ball.
Yeah, it looked like it. So I'm wondering if the picture is tricking us or not. I'm going to ask him that while y'all talk a little basketball.
I got you. But I think we've all, you know, kind of put an agreement there that we think it's going to be Kentucky and Duke in the final. And if that's the case, Brian, what do you see? What's your thoughts on Kentucky Duke?
I think it's probably the best matchup.
From a spectator standpoint,
for sure. It's going to anything, you know, that Kentucky going for history. That's what's driving the ratings for the NCAA tournament. So you'd have to assume CBS executives are quietly rooting for Kentucky or wearing their Kentucky T-shirt underneath their suit at all these games.
Absolutely.
But yeah, when you start to talk about the level of talent these two teams have, I think they both have great guard play. Jones has really impressed me this year. Interesting to know that. I mean, he's a kid that's from Wisconsin that chose Duke over Wisconsin, and has really been good all year, but has really grown into being the leader of Duke's team, even with Okafor. I mean, you need to have your point guard be kind of the guy that's running the show.
And Brian, and sorry for interrupting you, but do you think, or at least in my mind, that the season, the talent that Duke has, because they've got 8 high school McDonald's All-Americans, Kentucky has 9, you don't hear much this whole season. It's all been about Kentucky. You know, you've heard, or at least I heard very little about Duke.
Yeah, you know? And part of it was, you know, I think there was talk from the beginning of the year with that compilation of talent that Kentucky had, looking at their schedule. Again, notice that, you know, the difference between playing in the SEC versus the ACC.
That's right.
I think some folks felt from the beginning of the year that it was possible if Kentucky could get through some of those marquee non-conference games when they played Kansas and some folks like that early, that going undefeated was a possibility. I don't think, you know, even in Duke's best national championship years, they've ever really entertained going undefeated. Just when you looked at the talent this year that's in the ACC with Notre Dame, with Louisville, with North Carolina,
right,
with Virginia. You know, when you're playing all those teams home, and I know they don't have a full home and home schedule in the ACC where you're playing everybody, but still, you just, right, nobody expects anybody, yeah, to go through, and you don't hold it against them. You don't, right, oh, they're not good because they lost a game on the road. No, I mean, that's
right.
And
Brian, that's even, you know, you mentioned those teams, and certainly they are dominant, but I believe it's not Miami of Florida. Is that ACC? That's, mm-hmm, also ACC. Well, and I know it's NIT, but they're still playing.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the national semifinals, yeah, of the NIT.
A team that was very close. If they had won, you know, another, right, game in the ACC tournament, they probably,
exactly,
get one of those last spots.
That's right. And that's a good club that nobody's,
yeah,
you know, ever missed.
It's interesting. You know, I think as a team, most people talked about Kentucky all year.
Right.
But I think Jahlil Okafor was probably the most talked about player coming in this year. And so I think a lot of people early on when Duke was playing, everybody was just watching the big man.
Yes.
To see how he was going to do, and weren't really paying attention to the Tyus Jones and the Quinn Cooks and those guys that were on that team. And then as you started to watch them this year and realized, okay, they're a pretty good team. And I think when their guards really sort of stepped up their game, is what took Duke to the next level. Because it's tough to win with just one superstar freshman.
That's right.
But when you have a couple others step up, and that's what to me will be a great matchup in that game, will be Kentucky's guards against Duke's guards. And then I was thinking, you know, Kentucky has the advantage inside because they've got three guys to Duke's one. How do some of those other guys for Duke that are some of the role players that we don't know as much about,
right,
how do they step up and perform if they get to the – and I think they will. I would be very surprised if that's not the matchup come next Monday.
Yeah, I think that will be a great national championship game. You know, certainly Coach K, I don't know that anybody would argue the fact that he's as good or maybe the best one, you know, the best coach out there right now. He would be my pick. As to, you know, what he's able to do each and every year. They're going to be well coached. They're not going to make a lot of mistakes. Nor is, you know, probably will Kentucky either, you know. But I'm like you. I tell you what I hope doesn't happen. I hope the officials will just put their whistle in their pocket and only call what is obvious. Because, you know, if they get out there and they try to gain control of the game right off the bat and, you know, an Okafor or whatever, you know, one of those big guys, you know, gets a couple of fouls quick. Now, I'm not saying if they hammer somebody, fine.
Sure.
But I have seen so many, and I know it's hard to call from an official standpoint, there have been so many good defensive blocks that have been called fouls. I mean, it's ridiculous to me. So my hope is the officials just eat their whistle and let these kids play.
Yeah, and it's you know, this NCAA tournament is indicative of the entire season. You know, the trends that happen during the year,
yep,
you know, highlight themselves, especially when the stakes are raised. And you know, they've put so many defensive rules in the last few years, and it's funny, you know. And I realize part of it is they're reacting to things that have happened.
But that's true.
You watch nowadays, Ronnie, you've seen it. I mean, if there's a collision on the court and bodies go down,
yeah,
the referees come running in like a riot is about to start. Every single time. It's like they assume.
They're down on the floor.
And I realize, I mean, that's just okay. You know, and a lot of times you see the kids almost have this look on,
yeah,
their face like, you,
yeah,
know, no, we're good. You know, we bumped into,
yeah,
each other.
We
know?
Let us get up.
And I realize that part of the reason the referees react,
sure,
like that is because there have been incidents.
There has.
And that's just a change in mentality from certainly when I was a kid watching,
right,
basketball, you know, in the 80s, you know, the Lakers and Pistons,
yeah,
and the, I mean, where, you know,
Lamb,
if you went
Beard
in for a layup, you were catching an elbow to the face.
Yes.
And, you know,
it was brutal now.
And that probably was
Rick
a little
Mahorn
too far, yeah. but you look at it nowadays, they're so quick to call these fouls.
Yes.
Well, the players have adjusted now. And the one that bothers me now is when you see a kid getting pressured when he's running up court and they're body to body and you see him whip his,
yeah,
head back and,
yeah,
you know, trying to buy a foul,
right,
like the guy bumped him and the officials buy it every time and now we have to go to the monitor every time we think somebody might have gotten poked in the nose,
yeah,
to see,
you know,
if they should be ejected,
yeah,
for it.
I is mean, there a flagrant just, one or is there two?
You know,
or, you know,
guess what? I mean, it's basketball. Sometimes you know,
right,
your face is going to hit somebody's arm.
That's
and it has changed the game, and it changes the way kids play it. And in some ways, it's better. I do like the fact now that you see kids, when they get a rebound and secure it, they don't throw their elbows,
right,
out wide and swing. They've learned to cover the ball up,
right,
around their chest and,
yep,
protect it. And that's that's a good thing. But we also need to understand that, guess what? Occasionally, when two guys are going up for a ball, someone's going to get hit with an elbow. And it's not flagrant. It's not intentional.
It's
and it shouldn't be penalized.
No.
It's just basketball.
That's exactly right.
And those are the type of things I don't want to see happen in a national championship game, is to see a call like that
dictate
influence
the style of
the
play.
Outcome of the game, certainly. I would hope, just like you're down to the best of the best teams, the NCAA is going to have the best of the
best
officials there.
That's right.
And those guys understand what's at stake, and they're going to do their best to let teams play. You know, I think Kentucky's benefited from that all year. You know, you're so many times. How many times do we see at any level? But you know, think about particularly like a high school level, where big men get in foul trouble for doing
nothing.
But just being big.
Oh, they're penalized because
Because of it. And Kentucky's post players are so good about standing straight up, and they don't jump, they don't challenge, they just stand up big.
Right.
And they, a lot of times, they don't even block a shot. They just force an offensive player to change their shot to the point that they miss it.
And that's all you need.
And
because they're going to get out of the board.
But when those guys drive in, and this is where I thought, you know, getting back to this past weekend where Notre Dame did a phenomenal job the other night, was their guards and those wing players, they were big enough that they could get inside.
That's right.
And they did a great job of, when Kentucky came over to help, they had guys crashing from the backside and getting offensive rebounds and putbacks, which is something that I think Duke would be wise, if they get to Monday night, to look at that film, because Duke has that size and athleticism that if their guards can penetrate, they can beat their man, which then forces a Karl Anthony Towns or a Willie Cauley-Stein to leave their big...
Right.
To challenge at the rim, then you can almost do like Kentucky does, where you're basically just throwing an alley-oop over the defender's head, because you know there's a guy wide open on the backside.
Absolutely.
And that will definitely be something to watch if that matchup comes
to. Yeah, it's not complicated. It really isn't complicated. It's all about matchups.
Yeah, and that's where you see Kentucky, I think, has been very fortunate in this tournament. You know, I think there's some other teams... you know, where the matchups just didn't go as well for them, in terms of how the bracket got set.
Right.
I'm confident that if Virginia had been the one seed on the other side of that bracket, I think Michigan State would have beat a two-seeded Villanova.
Yeah.
And Virginia probably makes it to Sunday against Louisville, or not against Louisville, but against Michigan State, in which was a good game there in the second round. But you know, it probably is a game that, if it had been seeded right, should have been later in the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so we've got Kentucky and we got Duke in the final. Who you got winning?
I think Kentucky. I mean, if they make it that far, I'm not gonna go against him at that point. And I'll even say, not that I'm a Kentucky fan, but I would definitely be rooting just to be able to see the history.
See history made. Absolutely. That's me.
And I cannot think back over the last 30, let's see, if I'm 38, I've probably legitimately been watching basketball for 32, 33 years, and I haven't rooted for Duke yet in a basketball game.
And
I'm sure as heck not going to start now.
That goes back to your ties as a North Carolina fan, didn't it? All right, Jason, Duke and Kentucky's in the finals. Who wins?
Kentucky.
How much?
Oh, 7.
7 points.
Yep. I'm kind of like Brian. I can't pull for Duke. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pull for Kentucky as well, and I think Kentucky will win.
And I think they'll be in the finals. And I think Kentucky will win it. Duke just not got the firepower that Kentucky's got.
Yeah. Do you think, okay, here's, let me throw this now. Do you think the Kentucky-Wisconsin game will be a better game than the Kentucky-Duke?
Could be. I would say, you know, if when we were having this talk a couple weeks ago before the tournament started, you know, if we say, okay, Kentucky is a number one, I would say there was, you know, 3 or 4 teams in the country that – there's probably 20 or 30 teams that could on any given night beat Kentucky.
Right.
But if you were going to set up, say, a playoff style, best 3 out of 5, best 4 out of 7, you know, there's maybe 3 or 4 teams that I thought could take Kentucky in a series. And I would say Wisconsin and Duke are both on that very short list of teams that could possibly win a 7-game series against Kentucky, but certainly
can win a game.
One game, one night, they have enough talent to beat Kentucky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so, too. Hey, let's switch gears if we can, Jason, if that'd be all right. You know, I mean, still,
we're going to swap gears. If we're going to Alabama football after the break, now if it's okay. We're switching gears to something else.
I'm switching gears to Alabama basketball.
Right, Alabama basketball, fair game.
Then after we talk about that, then we go to break and we'll come back. Right. Alabama football.
We'll let you have your fun after that.
Yeah, we play the press conference. As most people know, Brian and Jason, Bill Battle has been to Wichita State and has spent multiple hours with Greg Marshall, and the report out there is they've offered $3.5 million. Correct me if I'm wrong. Where do you see that? What's your feelings? What do you think's going to happen? As far as I know, there's not been a word said since then. And does that mean anything?
And I saw somebody just when we were in the break. I was looking at social media, and someone said, you know, it's interesting that there hasn't been a response yet, but you would have thought by now at the same time that this would be about the time, if he's not going to take the job, that Wichita State would be announcing an extension and a raise, and they haven't announced that either.
Good point.
So I really get the feeling just from stuff that I've read that you know, and I think this is what Alabama's intention was they were going to put enough money on the table to force him to say no. And I realize that, I guess, the $1.8 million he's making, you know, people have to remember, you know, he's not a Wichita State graduate.
No, he's not from there.
And from what I've read, he's very happy there. His family likes it there. Obviously, it's a great situation coaching-wise, you know, to be kind of the big man on campus. You're at a non-football school.
Football.
You're in Kansas, which is basketball country.
Sure. There's a lot of things to keep
it
there.
You just won your state championship game, if you will, in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And so, you know, life's got to be pretty good there. But at the same time, if someone – I don't care if you're the garbage man. If someone offers you to double your salary – you know, it doesn't matter if you're making pennies and they double it, or if you're making millions and someone doubles it.
Absolutely.
That's a reason to pause and think about, okay, you know, maybe this is something I need to think about.
How many times in my coaching career, as it plays out, is somebody going to come off of me $3.5 million?
Yeah.
And probably, honestly, would they up that to four, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know if they would go that far. You know, is Texas having an opening now? Does that, you know, cause a bit of a bidding war? I mean, if I'm Greg Marshall's agent, I was probably loving life Sunday night when I heard that Rick Barnes was leaving. But
that's
here's
right.
something I think Alabama needs to really think about in terms of who they're going after, even if Marshall doesn't work, and kind of what is their plan
that's
B.
That's what we talked about earlier. What is their plan B?
You know, I don't know. I'm not saying it's not a bad time, but kind of you'll remember, 2007, you know, they had this kind of happen in their football search where they had plan A, and then at the last second it blew up. And I think in reality, I think Saban was plan A all along, and it wouldn't, you know, he wasn't ready to commit to it, so they kind of abandoned it. They tried to get Rich Rodriguez, and then when he said no, they said, you know what, we're just going to wait. And I'll be interested to see how they handled it, because you're talking about now a conference that has John Calipari, has Bruce Pearl.
Absolutely.
In state. Now has Rick Barnes
at Tennessee. Because Tennessee has hired him.
You've got Ben Howland now at Mississippi State. That is some serious college basketball coaching firepower. And these are guys.
Billy Donovan
already there.
Already won two national championships.
When you look at what the implications are as far as recruiting and college basketball, and what I would assume what Alabama fans want out of their basketball program is they want a team that more often than not is in the NCAA tournament.
That's right.
And I think that's a fair expectation.
And it should be.
To say you want that. You know, people forget, you know, Texas, you know, wasn't great over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
They
were still getting to the tournament. 16 out of the 17 years that Barnes was there, NCAA tournament. And you think about some of the guys that he recruited. You know, he got Kevin Durant out of New York City to come to Austin, Texas. All right? Big-time recruiting. Ben Howland, 3 consecutive Final Fours at UCLA. We're talking guys who are literally going to scour not just the country, the globe, for the top college prospects. You know, you've got to have if your goal is to say we want to be an NCAA tournament team on most years – that's where the SEC coaching pedigree has gone way up in the last 2 weeks.
Way up. Off the charts compared to
Can you imagine if you were a fan at Tennessee on Friday morning when this story breaks, you could not have imagined that there would be any way you could get a coach of Rick Barnes' caliber to replace the coach you just fired after 1 year, and it's a black eye for your school, and all of a sudden you come out looking squeaky clean.
Absolutely.
But to me, that's where, if I'm Alabama, I think Greg Marshall's the right guy to go after. But if he says no, I'll be interested to see, do they make an immediate sort of panic, you know, let's get somebody. Or do they kind of circle up and say, okay, who do we, you know, who is nobody thinking we would even consider asking, and we're going to ask that person next.
Right.
Because, like, when you've got Bruce Pearl at Auburn, you know what you're fixing to have to compete with in terms of not even so much the X's and O's and the recruiter, but just the buzz that he's going to create about basketball down there.
And I think you hit something right on the head there, Brian. And I've been in this state all my life, and I go to the state basketball tournament every year since I was in the 10th grade in high school, and I watch those kids play. There is not you have to have, I believe, you have to have someone with name recognition, not just in the state of Alabama, not just in the South. You've got to have somebody with name recognition across this country. The reason being, and I'm not saying there's not some talent in the state of Alabama. There is. There is not enough talent for Alabama, Auburn, and UAB to get and be competitive and get to the NCAA tournament. It can't happen.
No.
They're going to have to recruit outside of the state of Alabama, all of them, if they're going to continue to improve and get into the tournament. There just isn't enough talent.
You're right, especially when, you know, you look at the perfect example I think of is 2009. Two of the best players in the country, DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Bledsoe.
That's right. They both go to Kentucky.
So that's the level of when you're dealing with Kentucky. Kentucky is not worrying about who the top, you know, 50 kids are. When Kentucky is looking at who's the best kid in every state,
that's
who we're going to go recruit.
That's right.
That's the way Ben Howland's going to recruit. That's the way Bruce Pearl is going to recruit.
Exactly right.
That's the way Billy Donovan recruits.
That's right.
And so the bar has been raised in terms of what the basketball expectations. So if Alabama wants to get back to what I think, you know, should be a fair expectation for their school, they're going to have to find the right guy. And that may mean, you know, they may end up having to take somebody that isn't quite as big of a name. But if they do, they need to make sure that they've kind of fully vetted it and they know they're getting the next best thing. You know, it's interesting. Apparently, we've heard that, you know, possibly Marshall and Shaka Smart are the two guys that Texas is interested in. You know, if Smart doesn't take the job, does Alabama go get VCU's coach again?
See, that's one thing I think is a drawback for Shaka Smart. As much as I would be happy with him being there, is the stigma of we're going to get another guy from VCU when we had one here and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we got to go to a break. We're six minutes past due, so
all right,
we'll be right back.
I was going to say something, but it is a talk show. So, I mean, you know, what am I supposed to do? They don't talk?
95.5 Coleman, coming back with Alabama football.
I know what you're up to.
Hey, Coleman. Live 95 turns 1 year old on April 7th. And to celebrate, we are announcing the first annual Live 95 Battle of the Bands. If you're in a band or know someone who is, send them over to live95coleman.com for all the details. Tentative date is Saturday, May 2nd, and the whole thing will be broadcast live right here on Live 95. We invite any local band to participate, and we don't care if you're a solo acoustic performer or one of Coleman's best-known bands. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com or send us a message on our Facebook page to get booked. There is limited availability, so set times will be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. Live 95 will be taking donations at the event, and you can vote for any of the bands performing by donating to their tip jar. If you can't make the show, no problem. Donate online using PayPal from the Live 95 website and make your vote count. We'll offer each band a chance to get local airtime on Live 95 just for participating. And we'll be recording the whole thing back at the studio to re-air live cuts from the event during Live 95's regular playlist rotation. Get signed up today. Deadline to get on the set list is Friday, April 17th at 5 p.m. The set list and schedule will then be announced on Live 95 and made available on our website. Happy birthday to us.
And here's to another year of providing Coleman with a unique blend of music. Come and meet us Saturday, May 2nd, so mark your calendars. More details coming soon from Coleman's Independent Radio, Live 95.
.28, and that sound means it's time for Moolah, brought to you by People's Bank of Alabama. This week, $50, correct?
That's it.
$50, old cow out and about, and yeah, we've established not in Coleman County.
That's right. But you even gave a few more other clues.
Yeah. Catch us, have you got the other clues?
Yeah, I'm blank. Not all of them.
All right. Fire, what you got?
One clue that you gave was the sum of the highway was 13. Another clue that I gave is if you're looking for Moolah, the old spotted cow, she doesn't want to be where she is right now. And I don't remember the other.
The old spotted cow could be in a wooden structure.
That's it. I knew it had something to do with wood. So old spotted cow in a wooden structure.
And I'm not sure. And there's got to be another one.
And the other one was Go West, Young Man.
Yep, Go West, Young Man. Okay, so the next clue, again brought to you by People's Bank, sponsor of this segment. But the clue for today is, if you're looking for Moolah, look in a town that has seven letters. Look in a town that has seven letters in the name. So we'll have one more clue before we go off the air at 6 o'clock. Sometime between now and then, stay with us, and no telling when it'll be. It could be right in the middle of our conversation.
That's right. But if you know right now, give us a call, 737-9951, if you want to take a guess at where Moolah is.
All right, let's get off of basketball.
And
get on to my favorite topic of the day is the arrest report. Adding the city of
Tuscaloosa. Who would have ever thought Jason would say Alabama football is his favorite topic?
Yeah, but sometimes it rolls around.
Yeah, it's always, if you say that, there's always a negative behind it,
right,
I guarantee
right. It's the only way it can be positive. Now,
all right,
let's take a negative situation where Alabama has a repeat offender in domestic violence.
Been arrested.
Okay. Geno Smith, a repeat offender in DUI, and we have a arrest today of, and I'm not sure the name, Brown, the name?
Tyron Jones.
Tyron Jones, arrested for marijuana possession.
It wasn't his.
No, but on the bright side, he was already indefinitely suspended, so now...
Yeah.
And just to update our conversation, according to social media, about 20 minutes ago, it was reported that he has been dismissed from the program.
Jones?
Jones has.
Okay, so
you see,
Alabama players dropping like flies.
I think that's plenty.
Now, we're going to play a segment of the Nick Saban press conference, which...
And running, everybody can make their own opinions.
Yeah, Ronnie, you have to agree with me on this. Nick Saban handled this poorly.
I agree.
Like you said, we'll play it, let everybody make their own mind up.
Yeah, I thought it was as bad a press conference as he's done. Which he doesn't like media anyway.
Right.
And that's obvious.
Right.
But,
and he don't like anybody calling him into question at any time about anything.
I thought it was very poorly handled.
Jay, can you cue up Mr. Nick Saban? And let's hear what he has to say.
While Jason's grinning.
Yeah,
like
while I'm grinning from ear to ear. At least it's not Gus Malzahn.
We create a lot of awareness for with our players, and you know we would certainly be very cautious about any player that had any character problem. But a step, especially something like this, would be something that we would be very careful about, you know, in the future. But I will say this, you know, we will continue to try to create opportunities for players and try to help them be successful. And even in Jonathan Cater's case, if there's anything that we can do to help him overcome his issues and problems, we'll certainly try to help him be successful. But right now, you know, the guy just cannot be on our football team.
When you kind of re-examine the thought process, the decision-making process, and the vetting process. Do you feel like you made a mistake in offering Jonathan Taylor another chance here?
No, I'm not sorry for giving him an opportunity. I'm sorry for the way things worked out. I'm not apologizing for the opportunity that we gave him. I wanted to try to help the guy make it work. It didn't work. So, you know, we're sorry that it didn't work, and we're sorry that there was an incident, and we're sorry for the people that were involved in the incident. But we're not apologizing for what we did, and we're going to continue to create opportunities for people in the future. And we'll very, very closely evaluate anyone's character that we allow in the program, because we all have a responsibility to represent the University of Alabama in a first-class way, not to say how we should represent ourselves and our family.
Do you think his situation could have any effect on admission requirements or requirements for your program in terms of who you would let in moving forward?
Well, you know, I think as an institution, we would always, you know, really look at how we did things in the future. I think you learn from every situation. We certainly learn from this situation, and I think our administration has as well. So we'll be very cautious about how we go about any guy that has any kind of issues in his past. But, you know, I'd like to stay and emphasize the many, many players who have had problems in the past that have been a part of our program, who have turned out to be outstanding people, have represented the institution very well, have graduated from the university, have changed their legacy and their life because they were involved in the program. I don't want to overlook, you know, some of those positive things that we've been able to do as an institution together by the programs that we've created here that have helped players overcome adversity and have a chance to be successful.
Michael. Just wondering, you talked about the second chance and the things that you required. What were the specific things you required of Jonathan Taylor to earn this spot, and how do you think he was doing?
He did everything we asked him to do. Here, you know, he had a lot of psychological profiling. He had a lot of psychological counseling. He never missed a session. He did everything he was supposed to do. So, you know, we're sorry that there was an incident, and you know, we've levied the consequences. And I think that's all there is to talk about when it comes to that. We have 125 other players on our team who are doing really well, and there's really nothing else to talk about. Jonathan Taylor came here. We gave him an opportunity. It didn't work out. He failed. We're sorry. It's time to move on.
What was the vetting process, and who did you talk to in that, and what did you learn in that vetting process with him?
I don't know what the question is.
What was the vetting process like with him beforehand, and who all did you speak to, and what did you learn from that?
You know, I'm not really going to answer all those questions. I spoke to everybody that we could have that had an opportunity to give us some idea of what kind of young man that Jonathan Taylor was, and you know, and is. And, you know, I still think he's a good person. I think he has a problem in a circumstance, in a situation that is not acceptable. And that is his problem. And he has been, you know, certainly dealt with relative to this problem. So I'm going to say it one more time. I don't know what else that we need to talk about here.
Adam. Okay, Jay.
Yeah, he's not liking them too much at that point.
No.
The first thing I want to say is, who is he talking about? This is a good person. This guy is a scumbag. Let's call it like it is. This is his second incident of beating up women.
That they know of.
And that we know of. And Nick Saban is saying he is still a good person. Now, is that a case of covering your tracks, or does Nick Saban really believe this guy is a good person?
Nick Saban believed this guy could help them win more football games.
Right.
And I'm as big an Alabama fan as anybody around. I'm not a fanatic by any means. When the game's over, whether they win or lose, I go on whatever I was going to do, you know. But But that's the whole. You can slice it, you can dice it any way you want to. This was about bringing a kid in that you recruited heavily when he was in high school, and Georgia ended up getting him. And he's is it by chance he's 6'4", 330 pounds, and you're going to give him a chance to, you know, to redeem himself and be a better person? You're going to give him a chance to be a dominant defensive lineman. That's what you're going to give him a chance.
Let me give the number in case anybody else wants to chime in on this. 256-737-9951. Brian, let me tell you this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. The reason this subject tickles me so much is we discussed this when he was visiting the Auburn campus, or had an invitation to visit the Auburn campus. I was given a hard time by a couple of people. I'm not going to call them your names, but Ronnie Barnes and Eddie Gwynn were the initials.
I bet I know who that may be ringing that phone, too.
And I was told that just him visiting the campus showed where Auburn put their emphasis, even though that Gus said he would never offer a scholarship. And I don't know if the kid ever even visited the campus.
I will say he didn't.
Yeah, I don't think so. But he ends up signing Alabama. And I do give it to you and Eddie both, because you've called it like you've seen it since he signed with Alabama. Your thoughts on Jonathan Taylor?
I think Ronnie was right on just a second. I'm going to talk about, you know, you can spin this any way you want. Jonathan Taylor does not get a second chance at big time college football unless he is a potentially dominant, game changing player.
Right.
I have heard, and it may have been back when they signed him, when Nick Saban had one of his rant press conferences and he cited several kids that, you know, he has given second chances to, that have gone on and done great things with those second chances. I think the point that gets missed, there's two things I'll say. One is that I don't know that it's always necessarily, in this case, it's not necessarily Alabama's responsibility to give this kid a second chance.
Right.
Maybe it's, you know, UNA's opportunity, or a D2, another D2 school, or somebody else. The other side of this is, as you guys were just talking, that there were other schools that were interested. So, you know, if Jonathan Taylor hadn't landed at Alabama, there'd be some other SEC that's dealing with this right now. And the nature of the way college football works, with as much money as at stake, both in terms of what coaches are making and what schools are making, and the fact that college football is the NFL's minor leagues. Right. It is its farm system. You know, we're going to talk about this today. People around this state are going to keep talking about it this week. And nothing is going to change.
Right.
The next time some kid comes around that's screwed up somewhere, who's done something, you know, I will say the one thing I think has changed, and we've probably all noticed this just in the last year since the Ray Rice incident, that domestic violence has suddenly moved way up on the list of the unforgivables.
That's right.
Hate to interrupt you, Brian, but we've got a caller waiting. Eddie, welcome to Sports Talk Live, and I guess you've heard our conversation, what Ronnie had to say, what I had to say, and now Brian, agree, disagree, or how you looking at this?
Yeah, I agree. I just think a university that wins recruiting every year on year, does not need to roll the dice with somebody that put his hands on a woman.
Right.
And as you know, I'm a huge Alabama fan saying that, but I've said it since the first day that they signed this guy. It was not worth the risk that Saban took to bring in this guy. And now Saban's having to, you know, be Saban, and he's not eating crow. He's taking it in a Saban way. But he made a mistake. Just bar none, made a mistake with this kid.
But you won't hear Coach Saban say that.
No, you won't, and he made a mistake. And it's like I said when it first happened, Jason, if Bill Bible has to get on and explain why the program signed this kid, there was a problem from the very beginning.
Right.
He should not have been touched, especially by a school who's number one in recruiting year in and year out. Alabama, not saying anything bad about the other schools, Alabama should be better than bringing in a kid of that caliber.
That's right, Eddie. And just like that's right. And just like Brian was saying a minute ago, yeah, he may have deserved a second chance, but let's make it at a D2 school or something like that, you know, or struggling program. Alabama didn't need him, and he didn't need Alabama because he had plenty of other places, people that was going to take him.
I know. And, you know, and I, of course, Roddy, I see it at GSU. You know, I've seen a lot of those kids that, you know, struggled at Alabama.
Right.
Auburn have become pretty decent. You know, Perilou was a decent citizen at GSU when he was there, I've been told. But, you know, but it's just, I'm a firm believer, and I know there's rare examples. You know, he ended up being okay, but I don't think even Marshall deserved the SEC chance, even though he ended up being a good, you know, he turned it around. He did. But, you know, I firmly believe if another SEC school cuts a kid, I don't think any other school should touch him. And that's just my opinion.
And Eddie, football is a privilege. It's not a right. It's not life. I mean, we're given second chances in life, but football is a privilege, and you have a set of rules that you have to abide by if you want to play football.
Right. And, you know, it's different. If you miss on a kid out of high school, you don't have all the knowledge. But, you know, this kid was in trouble at Georgia twice, then kicked off. Okay, so he didn't get in trouble for 1 year. You know, but he still put, you know, there were witnesses that he choked his girlfriend. But, you know, it was known. It was fact.
Well, and Eddie, the thing right now, and Brian said a minute ago, right now, to me, the last thing any college coach would want to touch would be a player with a history of domestic abuse, you know, of beating up a lady. I mean, you know, with the Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, you know, the situation with his son, I just can't imagine why he would take that risk with, as Brian said, domestic violence is now at the top and the forefront, you know, of everything, you know, bad in sports today. I mean, so it just floors me that he would take him.
Well, and you know, you're not just looking at a struggling program. You're looking at a program that's won a lot of crystals, made it to the playoffs last year. You know, you're talking about one of the top programs in college football. Why do you have to take a chance? Why are you in a position where you have to take a chance on that type of kid? I don't get it.
Right, and Eddie, add to that, salt into the wound, two more arrests at the University of Alabama. What is going on at the University of Alabama?
Oh, you know, I don't know what's going on. Geno Smith, stupid. Jones, you know, I mean, that's all you can say. I mean,
yeah.
Well, guys, I probably shouldn't do this, but if I'm being honest, you know, I've been behind the wheel and been a dummy before in my youth as well.
Eddie, you just hit on a key point, that there is a difference between, even if it's, you know, stuff that gets in the criminal justice system, there's a difference between doing, you know, youthful stupidity.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think domestic violence falls under the category of youthful stupidity.
No.
That we see occasionally with alcohol, even something, you know, I'll chalk up something, go back, you know, 6-7 years to Cam Newton's stupid thing with a computer at Florida. I mean, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
And you can chalk that up to just kids being dumb and having to learn some life experiences and make some mistakes, and I'm okay if kids like that.
That's right.
Get a second chance, but certainly domestic violence is a whole different thing.
Yeah, that's not stupidity. I mean, it's not youthful stupidity. I mean,
but Saban says this guy's still a good guy.
Yeah.
It was like Nick Saban's daughter that he did that too.
Yeah. Hey, Eddie, Jason. That's right. Hey, and Brian may know, and you may know. Jason and I were just tossing around this idea a while ago that, you know, you bring this guy in, and he physically, potentially, or supposedly, I guess, he hasn't been convicted, but he assaults or there's a domestic issue with a young lady. Is there a way that the university or Nick Saban personally could be held in any way liable for that, knowing you're bringing someone in who already has charges of domestic violence and it happens again?
I don't know.
It's a matter of time till someone files a lawsuit to find out whether, you know, I don't know if it'll be this situation or, as we said, because this won't be the last.
My question is, if it was any of, I don't have a daughter, if it was any of our daughters and that happened to them, would you be filing a lawsuit?
I would. I would be after whoever I could get. I mean, if it was my daughter, I would be after Nick Saban, the University of Alabama, and anybody else that had anything to do with bringing this sleaze on to Alabama's campus. Right. I mean, he's not a great guy.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, you draw the line on a good football player, you know, you have to draw a line. Who cares if he's that good football player? He's one of the, you know, 22 starters. He's not going to mean that much to your program to take that kind of chance.
Right.
Just not worth it.
And, Eddie, I have to hand it to you, and I told Ronnie earlier, both of you have called it right down as you see it, even though you're Alabama fans, and I hope I would do the same if it was Auburn, and I meant what I said when I said that if Gus Malzahn offers this guy a scholarship, I would lose all respect for Gus Malzahn. Luckily, he didn't offer it, so I didn't have to go down that road. But
now, and you know, and that's the thing. Even, you know, we were kind of saying a while ago about JSU, but even if JSU offered this guy a scholarship, I'd lose respect out of those.
Oh, guys. Yeah, it's nobody, time to cut ties.
Nobody needs to touch this guy.
Yeah, my question to Eddie, you know, would be, okay, Coach Saban, you've got at least one daughter, whatever. Would you be comfortable bringing him as one of your football players over to your house for the weekend?
Yeah.
And if the answer to that is no, then why in heaven's name would you sign him to play football for you if you wouldn't want him in your house?
Yeah, and just like I said, if Bill Battle has to come out and talk about a signee the day it happens, there's a problem.
Yeah.
This Alabama is better than this.
That's right.
Or they should have been.
That's right.
But they should have been.
Yeah. You know, Saban should have been, the press conference today should have been talking about how spring training was going.
Mm-hmm.
There was basically none of that in his press conference. It was all about, you know, this situation with Taylor. And that's not fair. That's not fair to those other kids that play there either.
The only thing it does is helps Geno Smith and Jones because they don't get talked about near as much with their stupidity.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Geno Smith would be a big story on a normal day.
Yeah,
that's right.
And now he's not even talking about it. This idiot getting his second DUI. Like, get somebody to drive. You know, if you've done it once, just get somebody to drive this now. And you know, this kid's about to start. You know, and Jones, a friend of mine, her son played with him. You know, over in the Atlanta area, said he was a great kid. So, you know, she's not somebody at the guards who posted Jason as a thug or something. No, he wasn't a thug. He's just a stupid kid.
Yeah.
You know, but she was already, I guess Nick didn't say why he was booted off in the first place. It might have been marijuana related already.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about. And I think Ronnie or Brian said something. Huge difference in a marijuana charge and a kid being suspended or whatever than domestic abuse.
That's right.
There's no reason to ever put your hand on a woman. I don't care.
No. I agree with you.
Yep.
Hey, Eddie, thanks for calling. I thought I knew what you would say, but wanted to hear it.
All right, guys. All right, you have a good one.
Hey, see you,
thanks.
Eddie.
All right, good talk to you.
You too, man.
All right, everybody in pretty much agreement with that. Hard to disagree with that.
I don't know how anybody could disagree with that. It was a very bad decision.
But you will hear Alabama fans, some of the people type that call Feinbaum.
Yeah.
You will hear them agree Nick Saban done the right thing and he's all about second and third chances. Yeah, let's see what he does with this kid now.
They were all about somebody that they might could put on that field that make their football team better.
Right.
That's the bottom line. I don't care. What else you say, that's the bottom line. If a two-star athlete had happened to, you know, a 5'10", 175-pound defensive back, you think Nick Saban's going to give him the time of day trying to make him a better person? Please.
Right. He and 98% of the other coaches, as long as they win a ball game, they don't care. So
that's right.
I mean, when it's big money, as Brian said, and that's what makes the football go in the air, and we keep supporting it. So
that's it. But I think there's some point in time that the community, that the football community has to say, you know what, this is crossing the line, and this is just too much.
He is, when he has a guy that size, when he has his hands around a young girl's neck,
well,
he is
doing
a
like
minute.
A chicken.
Yeah, he is a minute or a couple of inches away from ending her life.
Yeah.
And this could have very well ended that way, and then what would have been said? How would Nick Saban explain that?
Yeah. How would you like to go, even with the situation as it played out now, how would you like to have to go to her parent and say, I'm sorry?
Right. He won't do it.
Then you would definitely see a lawsuit.
You got it.
Yeah. Nick Saban,
that's right.
Honestly, I think, feels he has nothing to be sorry for. He has sold himself on giving this kid a second chance.
Would he be sorry if it was his daughter?
Oh,
then he put his hands
no doubt about
it. Their throat.
No doubt about
come
it.
On. You know, he's got a daughter.
But it's different when it's somebody else's.
Okay. I guess so. Very disappointing.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even an Alabama fan. I didn't have high expectations of Nick Saban anyway. But I'm even disappointed in Nick Saban.
Yeah.
So.
Again. All right.
Brian, any closing thoughts on that?
I mean, you guys nailed it. I mean, it's I think I think by this point it's obvious that Nick Saban's going to get up and say what he wants to say. As somebody who is a PR person,
sure.
If I'm there at Alabama when he starts talking yesterday, I'm in the back of the room just holding my hand.
I was going to ask. Yeah. How do you handle that situation?
You can talk with him about what he should say and what the message needs to be. But unless you're the one standing at the microphone delivering that message, you don't have any control over that. I mean, the right thing to say yesterday is, Jonathan Taylor has been dismissed from our team. We gave him an opportunity. He did not meet those expectations. We will not tolerate that type of behavior in our program. And because of that, he's no longer here. And if the questions start coming about why did you, you keep it short and just say, listen, even if he wants to stick by his story of, I didn't do anything wrong, I think that's just his stubbornness and the fact he doesn't like being questioned. I don't think if you really got him aside and asked him that he knows.
Yeah.
He knew that the risk they were taking. But the way it was handled yesterday, was not the best. That's one where you hope someone like, again, a Bill Battle or someone tells Nick, slides him a piece of paper and says, read this and say nothing else.
Right.
Right.
Because it was a bad situation that even gained more momentum and more steam by the way Saban, handled his press conference. And, like Brian, it looks like whoever their communications person is, they would have had a conversation before he ever went up there to, let's make sure we do ABC and we don't deviate from that and we end up looking like a fool or look like like we're uncaring to the young lady who, was
injured. That should the message yesterday should have been, that domestic violence is something that we're not going to accept as part of our program. Yes, we know this young man had a history of it somewhere else. We told him before he came here, this is the expectation. He did not meet that, therefore he's no longer with us. And then you have a chance to spin it of saying,
we
because the message is that, well, you did tolerate it because you brought him here in the first
that's
place.
That's right, exactly.
And if they had done it right, they could have gotten the message out to say, no, we didn't. The first time it happened here, he's gone.
Right.
And
Nick Saban used three I'm sorry's or we're sorry.
Yeah.
But only one of those directed, and it was toward the end, at the young lady and anybody else involved. But really what Nick Saban is sorry is this didn't work out.
That's right.
He's
sure.
missing right. a football player.
Yeah, he said they want to create an opportunity for players to be successful. Well, every college wants that from their players, so, big deal with that. It says not sorry for giving an opportunity, wanted to help him.
Right.
Now, okay. Not sorry for giving the opportunity. I can live with that statement, but then when you come back wanted to help him, I'm no Rhodes Scholar. I'm not Einstein, but I can read right through that.
Right.
Okay. You wanted to give him an opportunity to help. You're going
to
help him.
You wanted to give him an opportunity to help you.
That's exactly right. Get me back to the playoff again. And by what he said, it just insults to me. It's insulting that he thinks I'm that stupid to believe.
Yeah.
The comments that were made.
And as Brian said, it happens every year. A player gets in trouble for this or that. Can we not have some kind of agreement between the colleges? If this is at this level, he's not going to be taken by any other Division I. That's just the way it's going to be. If he's kicked off this team for domestic violence,
that'll never happen.
He will not be taken by any other team.
It'll never happen.
No, it won't ever happen.
Well, the level where it needs to come down for is that it is, and this is what we talked about in terms of the lawsuit, that the schools need to say, no, when Nick Saban comes to the school and says, I want to have this kid admitted to our school, and the university says, no, we will not admit him to our university.
Exactly. That's where it needs to start. Not with the football coaches.
Take it out of the coaches' hands.
That's right.
Because the coaches are always going to side on the coaches are always going to go on the side
of. How much pull does Nick Saban have at the University of Alabama?
Well, that's, I'm saying no, the university needs to have it in their it needs to be in the university's policy to say if you have a criminal history, not just criminal history, but again, if you want to get specific, domestic violence, felony, whatever, that you know.
Yeah. And not, I mean, is it right now, and I guess it is, that if that is the case where you had domestic issue or any kind of felony, as you're filling out your applications to go to that college, is there anywhere on there to ask you that?
I would assume that there is.
I mean, it does if you're trying to get a job.
Another job, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, is it on the application?
Or is it covered under the laws covering minors? Doesn't have to be disclosed. I don't know.
Good questions.
But he's not being charged as a minor.
No, not this time. But what about the first time? Was he a minor when he committed the first act?
I don't know.
And here's another thing. Then we've got to close up for today. But the other thing that really sticks with me about this, Nick Saban didn't even wait for this kid to go to trial on the charges in Georgia. He really don't know what happened.
Yeah.
It could have been a whole lot worse. Could have been not as bad. Yeah. Why not at least wait until he finds out what happened?
Because other colleges were after
him,
and we
got because somebody else would get him.
That's right. Bottom line.
Brian agrees with us with a head shake. Brian, thanks for coming in.
Glad to do it, guys. Man, glad you came.
We run out of time for a moolah clue, so join us Thursday, and we'll give out 30 Thursday if we can get. We'll start the show with one.
Full of kindness.
I want to see that happen on a Thursday show.
All right. Hope everyone survived the hell storm. If so, we will see you Thursday, and a lot planned for then. Until then, Ronnie, a big war eagle.
And a little small row tie today.
All right, folks. We'll be back with you Thursday. You've been listening to Sports Talk Live, 95.5, Coleman, Alabama.
Another one bites the dust, yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We'll be right back.